Stock exception discussion, tab number three, Rip Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As just indicated, the documents for this discussion are behind tab number three. The primary document is document number one, which is the discussion on the mixed stock exception. Just to bring everybody up to speed on what has been happening with the Groundfish Committee, since the last council meeting, there have been no committee meetings. After the council approved the Amendment 16 DEIS, the document was submitted to the service at the end of March. There's an ongoing interaction between the service and council staff to get some of the service's concerns with the document resolved in time to get it to back to being submitted on April 17th. We are currently waiting for the service to publish the notice of availability in the Federal Register in order to schedule the public hearings on Amendment 16. It's at this point, it's likely they will be towards the end of May or start towards the end of May. There are a series of informational meetings on Amendment 16 that will begin next week in an effort to help members of the industry answer questions about Amendment 16. There are schedules of these information, and these are not public hearings. They are purely informational meetings. There are schedules outside on the table. The schedule was put out by GMRI. I think GMRI is organizing these, and I believe you can probably go to gmri.org and also get the schedule online. As part of our discussion today, we're essentially under the Framework 42 discussion. After our last council meeting, the service submitted their amended response to the court, and the court refused to consider the document until the council had the opportunity to review the amended document, and that's our subject for discussion today. To get that process started, I've asked Gene to give the council a review of the addendum to the analysis, which is the changes that were made. And after that, with the chair's concurrence, I had to sort of get the discussion going. I had a series of questions to ask Gene.
Thank you, Rip. I'm going to make this fairly brief because we've been through the original report in considerable detail, and I'm going to limit my remarks to an overview of the changes from that original report that we submitted to you at the last council meeting as it compares to the current revised report that you have in your materials. And I don't know if you mentioned, Rip, this is under 3, number 1, documents for the mixed stock exception discussion. There's a several documents there, including some pleadings, and then at the last document in that packet is the reconsideration or the further consideration of the mixed stock analysis. And just to pick up on where Rip left off, the court ordered that the defendants seriously consider and analyze the mixed stock exception as to Framework 42's 2-for-1 days at sea counting provisions in response to the council's findings from the April meeting, referring to this meeting. So the court has ordered us to consider any findings that you might have during this discussion and to report back to the court on April 10th, which is Friday, 2009, after considering the council's findings. Now, the primary change, other than a few edits and clarifications in the body of the original report, is from that report is the addendum starting on page 12 of the document entitled Further Consideration and Analysis of the Application of the Mixed Dock Exception to Ending Overfishing and its Applicability to Framework 42 to the Northeast Multi-Species Fishery Management Plan, February 2009. We looked at the Council's motion at the February meeting as the starting point for this addendum. And that motion is found in the middle of page 12. And specifically, the motion asks NMFS to reconsider its position and make it consistent with congressional intent that optimum yield should be from the fishery as a whole, and one stock should not dictate severe constraints on the fishery as a whole while the stock is being rebuilt. Now, the maker of the motion, Dr. Pierce, had said in his introductory remarks that the congressional intent could be found in part in Section 2 of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which I think is also included in your materials. This is sort of the introductory provisions of the Magnuson-Stevens Act concerning findings, general findings of Congress as to what the problems are regarding fisheries and how the Magnuson Act is intended to address these problems, concerns, and policies. So we took a look at this particular provision and concluded that there was nothing in that provision that indicated any clear congressional intent at all that there should be in developing management measures a mixed stock type exception that is consistent with congressional intent. In fact, if you look at some of the specific provisions that refer to overfishing, rebuilding optimum yield, they refer to stocks of fish rather than a fishery as a whole. In particular, and this isn't specifically cited in this addendum, but I think it's important to point out in this discussion, under Section 2A, Paragraph 2, Congress found that certain stocks of fish have declined to the point where their survival is threatened, and other stocks of fish have been so substantially reduced in number that they could become similarly threatened as a consequence of increased fishing pressure. And then if you go down to paragraph 6, Congress found that a national program for conservation and management of the fishery resources of the United States is necessary to prevent overfishing, to rebuild overfished stocks, to ensure conservation, et cetera. So we looked at these general findings and found that, in fact, Congress seemed to be focused on actual stocks of fish and not this general concept that you look at a fishery as a whole and you can have more or less restrictive management measures on weaker stocks versus stronger stocks in order to achieve an optimum yield on a fishery as a whole. We also looked at Senate reports reflecting congressional intent, both for the 1996 Sustainable Fisheries Act, where this concept of timelines for rebuilding was first introduced, and the more recent 2006 reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And some of the sites from those congressional reports are cited in the addendum, and we think that they none of them specifically refer to a mixed stock exception or the ability to look at the fishery as a whole and ignore weak stocks or not address weak stock rebuilding requirements. And in fact, we actually interpret those Senate reports as supporting the notion that every stock should be addressed for purposes of rebuilding. We also looked at court interpretations of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. There are even some that actually interpret the findings section, and those are referred to in this addendum as well. And we found that court interpretations do not identify any mixed stock exception per se or the requirement to consider a mixed stock exception. And in fact, as a rule, these courts have said if there's a conflict between mitigating economic impacts and conservation requirements, such as rebuilding objectives, then the rebuilding objective conservation management measures shall prevail. There's several other references to fisheries and overfished stocks throughout the rest of the Magnuson Act. Admittedly, there is the terms are used interchangeably, fisheries versus stocks. The definition of a fishery is found in the Magnuson Act, and it says that it is a stock, one or more stocks is what makes up a fishery according to the definition. And when you look at the specific provisions concerning rebuilding requirements, the Act at one point refers to fisheries, but at other points refers to rebuilding the affected stocks that are being managed. So looking at all of these things together, we came to the conclusion in taking into account the Council's motion at the last meeting that the premise for the Council's motion concerning congressional intent is incorrect, and there is no need or justification to change the analysis or conclusions contained in the original report. So that concludes my summary, Mr. Chairman, or RIP.
Okay, Gene, and these are not in any particular order, and they as you will see, focus sort of more on some of the process questions with this. If the court decision concerning the elimination of the 2-to-1 counting is left in place, does that impact anything beyond Framework 42? More specifically, will it impact the actions taken under the interim rule? And would it impact just the first 180 days? Or would it impact the entire interim rule?
I'm not sure if I understand your question entirely. The court's order suspending the 2-for-1 days expires by his own admission 38 days after the date of the court order, which I believe is April 10th. So as of that date, the Framework 42 2-for-1 measures are back on the books according to how we are reading the order. So from that date on, the interim rule, to the extent that it continues those 2-for-1 days, is in place. In fact, I believe the interim rule, those measures would stay in place regardless of the interim rule, the ones that are identical to the pre-existing Framework 42 measures. So the court's order as it now stands would not affect the interim rule, and then you would have this period between April 10th and May 1st where the 2-for-1 provisions go back into effect. Does that answer your question?
Yes and no. Let me try it in another form, and that is, if the court makes a decision that has an impact on the language of the mixed stock exception, does that only impact the 1998 mixed stock exception regulations? Or does it have the potential to impact the 2006, the reauthorized and new mixed stock exception regulations?
Well, you're asking, I don't know what the court's going to say. So I don't want to speculate as to how he might, I mean, he could formulate the effect of his order, I guess, any way that he wanted, whether we agree with it in terms of legality or not. So I can't anticipate what any future order might entail.
Okay. From your point of view, what determines congressional intent? In the colloquy, do comments of a few congressmen determine congressional intent as expressed by the colloquy, or does the actual language in the Magnuson Act determine congressional intent?
Well, in interpretation of statutes, the general rule is that to the extent that the statute is clear on its face, that states congressional intent. In other words, that is what the law is, regardless of whether there may have been conflicting statements in other accompanying documents or comments made by congressmen or by congressional reports or Senate staff or congressional staff reports. Now, if there is some ambiguity or it is not clear from the statute, then courts have gone to other ancillary documents or statements by congressmen to try to discern what the congressional intent was to clear up such ambiguity or a lack of clarity. And so it can range from the official reports of the Senate or congressional staff involved with developing the law to even comments on the floor, although those tend to be of less importance if they're directly contradicted by the actual statutory language.
And one last one. Is it your sense that the council is required to take any action other than the review of this to respond to the court's desire?
No. This order has been framed in terms of what the federal defendant shall do. The first couple of orders by the court did include what could be characterized as directives to the council. We as federal defendants argued in motions to the court that that was not appropriate since the council was not a party to the action. Now, the court didn't directly address that argument on our part, but his latest order seemed to back off of making directives to the council and instead couched the order in terms of what the federal defendants should do and that we should present it to the council and let the council make its findings in light of that, although it's not necessarily ordering the council to make any findings, as I read the opinion.
Thank you, Gene. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I read the two-page order. I think I'm reading the right order here. There's been so many documents. The February 23rd order, is that the most recent order?
I think so.
Yeah. Two or three pages. It says that the service responded to the council's motion of our last meeting by preparing a revised report dated February 09, but the council has not had an opportunity to review the revised report. The council will have reviewed the revised report by its next meeting to be held April 7th through the 9th. Council plays an integral role in passing and amending fisheries regs. Therefore, prudent and thorough agency action leads the court to extend the suspension of Framework 42's 2-to-1 days at sea counting provisions as provided for in a previous order. Seems here the concept is that this extension provides an opportunity for defendants to consider and analyze the mixed stock exception as to Framework 42's 2-to-1 counting provision, and that the court is anticipating that this council may want to review the addendum to the original report. Do I have that right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea was the court felt that the council should have an opportunity to review our revised report, including this addendum that responded to the council's motion.
Okay. Anyone on the council? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, to some of the questions you asked, Mr. Chairman, and points that you raised, indeed, you know, that the judge has recognized the importance of this council, our responsibility. That indeed we're certainly far more than advisory, and he actually postponed his decision regarding the report that was provided to him by the service after our last council meeting. He postponed any action to give us an opportunity to once again see what the National Marine Fisheries Service has been able to produce for the court and for us to review it. And I assume to provide some additional guidance to the court regarding the adequacy of that particular report prepared by the service. So here we are, and we have it before us, and Gene has briefly summarized the points made within the document, and he highlighted the addendum, which really is the heart of the report. That's where all of the changes have been made and new material has been presented. Perspectives have been reiterated. The mentioning of our particular motion, the motion that passed at the last council meeting. So it's all there before us as an addendum. Gene also referenced my remark that I made in relation to the motion that I made at the last council meeting about the page one of the Magnuson Act, where indeed there are the findings, but I also highlighted for the benefit of the council the purpose of the act, as stated on pages 2, 3, and 4, thereabouts at the very beginning of the act. And the purpose, of course, is very important for us to focus on, since we need to, as a council, be consistent with, abide by the act. So the judge has given us this opportunity to review the report. And I'll just quickly say, because I'm not going to dwell on the document, since most of it's the same as what we've seen before, that the service has done not much more than go back over the congressional record and interpret it in the way that the Gene has just done. So really what we have before us is no analyses of the applicability of the mixed stock exception. We just have a statement presented in the addendum that the service's position, its interpretation that it provided at the last council meeting is correct, and that the council's understanding or interpretation of the act of federal law is incorrect. I think it really comes down to that. RIB then highlighted, appropriately so, some correspondence that we received from very prominent congressional leaders, members of the Senate, members of the House, members of the House and Senate who we know so well, who have been very involved in fisheries management in New England for a long time, have been instrumental on a number of fronts regarding assistance to this New England groundfish fishery in particular. So he noted those particular letters, and indeed they are strongly worded, very strongly worded regarding their understanding of congressional intent. They make law, so indeed they should know what their intent was. And of course, those comments were made in relationship to the interim rule, but those comments are very appropriate to the mixed stock exception and the decision that we made at our last council meeting. Now, I'll refer you briefly to Paul Diodati's letter, my director, his letter that you all have before you. It was sent to the council end of last week. It was emailed. I had thought it might have been emailed to you as well, but I don't think it was. So you have the hard copy in front of you, prepared by council staff, presented by council staff. It's relatively brief. I think it's to the point. He's recommending that the council not accept the National Marine Fisheries Service revised findings because there really is nothing new for the council to review, because the service still has not provided an analysis. It feels that no analysis needs to be presented as a consequence of their interpretation of congressional intent. Paul also highlights the congressional intent. I mean, why not? We're going to shine the spotlight, put the spotlight right on those particular points made by those congressional leaders. I'm not going to repeat what they said. I'm sure you had a chance to read that. So we have no analyses to review, and that puts us in a position where I think we can rather quickly deal with this report and not get too immersed in all of the pieces of it. I would like to make a motion, Mr. Chairman, and I believe they have it. I would move. Okay, I would move that the council disagree with the conclusions of the National Marine Fisheries Service report dealing with further consideration of application of the mixed dock exception and submit it to the council for review as ordered by Judge Edward J. Harrington, and inform, number two, inform Judge Harrington that the National Marine Fisheries Service has failed to perform the analyses for council review. Consequently, even though the council believes the mixed dock exception should apply as intended by Congress and in keeping with federal law, without the court-ordered NMFS analyses, the council is unable to provide the court with a council review.
There's a second. Dave Gaethel. I guess I have a question. What's the reference to federal law? What is that?
Magnuson Act.
The mixed dock exception in the Magnuson Act.
Well, I'm referencing the right, should apply as intended by Congress and in keeping with federal law. In other words, Mr. Chairman, I'm referencing the comments, the strongly worded arguments made by the senators and by the from the House and from the Senate relative to congressional intent, consistent with, of course, the federal law that we've been working with for so many years.
I guess I'm just suggesting it's not part of the law. Okay, so is it appropriate to say that it's...
Well, in order to simplify matters, because you're identifying what could be an inconsistency and something that would lead to confusion, I would, if the maker of the motion doesn't mind, I would say to strike in keeping with federal law, and so would read, though the council believes the MSE should apply as intended by Congress, and then go on from there.
Okay, I'm going to take comments from the rest of the council, but before I call the question, I'd like to have a discussion about the statement in the motion that says that the council believes the mixed dock exception should apply. So, Sally?
First of all, I would suggest, although you've asked for a second and it has been seconded, that this motion would be out of order. Reread the order that came from the court on February 23rd, and it seems clear to me that the request from the court back to National Marine Fisheries Service was to look at the applicability of the 2-to-1 counting in Framework 42 and how the mixed stock exception might apply in that context. That was the paragraph that that Gene read when he gave his introduction, and that I had been digging for, and he found it and read it, and I thought it was pretty specific that's what, you know, that the judge was trying to hone in on something here, and you know if this motion goes forward, it's a reiteration of a motion that that passed in February. I happened to vote against it. Five others happened to vote against it. It puts the council in the position, quite frankly, that's very similar to the position that we were in with the interim rule, where the council says something, NMFS says no, the council says the same thing again. And, you know, and here we have the NOAA administrator coming. It's like having the principal come. And, you know, we're going to get in this position where, you know, if we don't get some couples counseling or something to figure out how to work this through, then we're going to be stuck in 2004, you know, for I don't know how long before we actually make a move on this. So, you know, I have a lot more to say about this. I'll raise my hand again, and I hope you'll call on me again. But for now, I would say I'd suggest that this is out of order.
Well, I'm not sure to what degree we've had any discussion about the contents of the addendum, quite frankly. And that is where the judge has asked us to focus our attention, but I'm going to continue to have discussion. David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't see how you can really rule it out of order. I got to speak to that point first because the analysis has not been done. The analysis is that we can't do, you can't even do the analysis because you don't need to. And I respectfully disagree with that point of view. I think we do agree on one thing, and that is there is confusion about the definitions of stock and fishery. That confusion has been inherent in this act from day one, and quite frankly, it needs some kind of a federal ruling to clear it up once and for all. And while I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV or anything else, I do think that Attorney Ouellette has provided us with a 12-page document, which appears to be, from my plain reading of his interpretation of this, a relatively straightforward legal argument that is 180 degrees opposite that of the service. But I constructed my own argument based on what I would hope would be common sense. Let's put the lawyers aside for a moment. I still like to think that judges might deal with the meaning of the word is as the 99% of the world understands it, not as that 1% who argues endlessly to have 35 definitions of it. And to that extent, I went back to the actual act, and I want to read you some of the appropriate language here, direct from the act, that is at the crux of this debate. From page 2, section 104-297, number 4, to provide for the preparation and implementation in accordance with national standards of fishery being the operative word, management plans, which will achieve and maintain on a continuing basis optimum yield from each fishery. Seems pretty straightforward. It's talking about a fishery. It's not talking about an individual stock. From page 7, section 99-659, number 13, the term fishery means, here we have the definition, one or more stocks of fish which can be treated as a unit for the purposes of conservation and management and which are identified on the basis of geographical, scientific, technical, recreational, and economic characteristics, and B, any fishing for those stocks. Ah, the word stock rears its head, appearing to be used in the same text. Call your attention to page 9, section 104-297. Section B, on defining optimum, is prescribed as such on the basis of the maximum sustainable yield from the fishery. Again, fishery, not individual stock, as reduced by relevant economic, social, and ecological factors. Finally, page 10, section 104-297, subpart 37. The term stock of fish, this is the only time I could find any definition of stock of fish, means a species, subspecies, geographical grouping, or other category of fish capable of management as a unit. Doesn't define it as a single species. That's only one of several definitions. Then we go on to page 44. And this won't take all that long, but I think it's vital to lay these arguments out so that everybody understands why it is that we need this ruling. Under the national standards, National Standard 3, to the extent practicable, an individual stock of fish shall be managed as a unit throughout its range, and interrelated stocks of fish shall be managed as a unit or in close coordination. That appears to talk about a fishery from where I sit. So it appears to me that the fundamental root of this problem from day one has been that the terms fishery and stock are used interchangeably. Now, if in fact they meant a single stock of fish should be managed as a unit, one species, there would be no need to have ever written a multi-species stock exception because you would only be managing one species. So why would you need to have a multi-species stock exception? So if again, from plain common sense, looking at this, if there was a mixed stock exception put in here, it was assuming that a number of stocks, biological species, were being managed as a unit. Otherwise, you would never need it in the first place. You would have never included it. So with that being said, I'd like to call your attention to a couple of short quotes from the book that Spencer Apollonia and Jake Dykstra have just written. And for those of you who haven't read this book, it's entitled An Enormous, Immensely Complicated Intervention, at which we're right at the heart of. I would strongly urge all the council members to read it, all the members of the audience, and anybody that's associated with fishing in any way, shape, or matter, because it calls into play here a number of the important questions of the day, and I don't want to argue points based on the book that people haven't read, but I have read it from cover to cover, and I think there are a lot of issues in here that are central to the arguments that we're having today and ultimately hinge on whether or not the fishermen and the fish will survive this process. Notice I said both, because one of the conclusions of this book from where I sit is that single species management, while it may be necessary in the beginning to get things going, will ultimately lead to ruination of both the fish and the fishermen. And that is why I think this concept is so important, and we need this point argued out to its conclusion. You know, I've seen a number of letters being written here saying, oh, the council doesn't want to do its work, it doesn't want to deal with overfishing. At least in my particular case, nothing could be further from the truth. I am very concerned that we are headed down a road that ultimately leads to the destruction of everything, and that single species management has run its course. So, from page 186, and no one apparently noted that such a strategy of separate management plans recommended by NIMS would have been a violation of National Standard 3, which says in part, interrelated stocks of fish shall be managed as a unit or in close coordination. Even in 1976, there should have been little doubt, as the council later ceded in ADF, that many of the stocks were interrelated biologically and economically. The innocence of NIMS also was revealed by its assertion that so many species could be managed separately. It has learned by hard experience that it could not hope to manage separate plans, the diverse and interrelated groundfish species of New England. And one last short point from a paper by a fellow named Allen, 2003, on ecosystem management, which is where everybody says we ultimately have to get to. We have noted that environmental management becomes ineffective when we manage for the outputs of productive systems rather than for the systems themselves. Such production systems experience endless variation in output, so managing for their output entails attending to a myriad of details. This approach was described as like sticking one's finger in the dike. And that is exactly where we are at the moment with single species management. We're running up and down the dike, trying to stick a finger in, a little crack here and there, to manage something that we really need to be looking at a much bigger picture of. We need to be looking at a picture of the fishery. The fishery in this case is cod and haddock. That's the vast majority of the fish in the fishery. Do we need to consider the other stocks? Absolutely. That's why they put in a mixed stock exception. Gives very specific guidance on how to deal with those so-called minor stocks to make sure that they aren't driven to economic or biological extinction, listing on the Endangered Species Act, etc. But it does not say that we have to go through every stock and manage it as a single species for maximum sustainable yield. If we do, we've ultimately set ourselves up for failure on a biological plane. This is my personal belief. This is not about overfishing, overfished, anything else. It's about whether or not we are going to ultimately fix the problem, which is what I want to do. So with all those things being said, I do think the motion is in order. I think we need to go to the judge. We need to say to the judge, sir, the New England Fisheries Management Council and the National Marine Fisheries Service have a fundamental difference of opinion about the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and we need a ruling. Thank you.
And if I could just ask you a question, Dave. You've determined for yourself that the mixed stock exception would allow us to put all stocks besides cod and haddock in that classification?
I think that would be a determination of the council as to how we want to deal with stocks. I have, you know, that was my personal view of it, but I don't think that I would say that that could be the view of the whole council. And I think our view would change over time. We would probably move stocks in and out of review based on what we felt was necessary to properly manage the fishery and get a number of these stocks to as high a biological level as possible.
Right. So, but for you, the fishery is really about cod and haddock, and the other stocks that are currently part of the plan are minor stocks or not really what the fishery is designed around.
My views are predicated mainly on the Gulf of Maine because that's what I know the most about. But I would say for the Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank that cod and haddock are the driving species. For southern New England, I'd probably have to rethink that, and I'd probably make a different statement. I know I would. But, you know, so I guess I should say that my comments would be reference to the Gulf of Maine primarily because that's my area of expertise.
And so your read of what is currently and what was the mixed stock exception guidelines, the criteria, number one, would apply to more than one stock or could apply to more than one stock. Okay.
Anyone else? That's correct. I want to answer for the record that, it could apply to more than one stock.
So you've read the guidelines in 1998, that were the guidelines in 1998. And you've looked at the situation we were in 1998, and you think that we could have applied it to multiple stocks at that time.
That's right. Yes, I've read everything over and over and over, and I've tried to parse this out over and over and over. And I think there's a huge amount of confusion. I'm even, just with what I just read you, relatively short, one-sentence statements, that there was inherent confusion from day one. And that, is my interpretation the only interpretation? I'd say absolutely not. I suspect there are 18 people sitting here. We probably could have at least 18 different interpretations here. There's another 75 odd in the audience. Same thing. I bet every one of them would have a different interpretation. But ultimately, there's one person that matters, and that's Judge Harrington's.
Right.
And what I'm saying is this problem's been around since day one. And it's an inherent problem that has never been solved. It's led to countless issues with management as this tension exists between, people who think it's one species and we manage to that one species only, and people who think it's to the multiple species of the area, and then the council saying, okay, we think these are the major species that dominate this ecosystem. These are the ones we need to be very careful of, and these other ones are more minor, and if they're overfished on a temporary basis, as long as we have set some mechanism in place to ultimately hopefully fix the problem, that it should not be an issue of I won't say of concern, but it shouldn't be the driving force.
I think what you're talking about is much broader than what we've been asked to review by the judge. And that was sort of my point. And I agree with you. We have leaks all over the place right now. The reason I asked or pointed out the part of the motion that says the council believes the mixed stock exception should apply is whether it was the old one or the new one, the new guidelines or the old guidelines, I really don't think it works for the situation we find ourselves in. And I'm not suggesting that, oh, well, too bad, pack up your bags and let's move on. What I'm saying is I don't think that's the solution to the situation we find ourselves in.
What I'm saying is that we've never even had the chance to have that discussion.
Right.
I'm not saying that the management action may have ultimately come out the same after we'd had the discussion, but because we never had the discussion, because we were told we couldn't have the discussion, we have never had the ability to explore that and see if it might be an alternative way of managing that would produce better results for both the fish and the fishermen. This is what I really care about. I mean, again, I don't want to interpret what's in this book for people that haven't read it. But from where I sit after having read it, these people are telling us that things like the great year class of haddock we have on Georges Bank that we widely consider as a gift, they see as a cautionary tale. They see this as a warning that your system is out of balance. And the system is like a spring. And if you pull a spring a little bit like this back and forth, you can bend a spring virtually forever. If you take a spring and you go like that and you spring it, it won't come back. And what they're saying is single species management leads to the spring tending to be sprung, not tending to sit there having these little back and forth motions. And, you know, that's my reading of this. And that's what I'm really concerned about. And you know, so it's really a fundamental point for me. This is really important. It's not, you know, I'm really sick of the argument being said, oh, the council doesn't want to manage the fish. You know, I don't think that's the case. I know it's certainly not the case in my case. But I don't want to do something that has such a dramatic effect on the ecosystem that by thinking we've done the right thing, we've ultimately destroyed it and done the wrong thing. That could be even worse. And if we get hemmed in, boxed in by very narrow legal definitions, that may be where we end up. And that concerns me greatly. And that's why I've been so passionate about this and pushing it so hard.
Thanks, Dave. Anyone else? Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with almost everything that Dave Gaethel said. I've read all that same stuff, and his points are very compelling and I think for the most part true. The two points of view here that we are dealing with today, one was outlined by National Marine Fisheries Service, and the best outline of the other one was by Attorney Ouellette. I hope I pronounced that right. Both points of view, when you read them, seem reasonable, but they're also incompatible. And we've seen a misuse for a long time, as David pointed out, of the terms fishery and the term stock. And I totally agree with him that single species management has been a complete disaster. It's bad for the fish, it's bad for the industry. These facts make Ouellette's position appear very attractive because his position leads directly, as Dave pointed out, to ecosystem management, or at least to the first steps of ecosystem management. And if we begin to go there now, as we are determined to do with the Habitat Committee, that certainly is going to ease the way into Amendment 17. But there are a few flies in the ointment. First one is that for 30 years, we've got this precedent set of single species management, and we need to have exactly the discussion that Dave Gaethel was talking about. We need to have that discussion. But the problem here is that what we have in front of us is a motion that's entirely defective. It doesn't do what he wants to do, and it has internal inconsistencies that are not acceptable. First of all, we're expected to inform Judge Harrington that National Marine Fisheries Service has failed to perform the analysis, but we believe that the exception applies without analysis. That doesn't make sense. How can we believe that something applies when we haven't analyzed it? And we've already said that it hasn't been analyzed. So that statement just makes no sense to me at all. And then we say beyond that, as intended by Congress. Actually, that's the part of the first motion 3 months ago that caused me to vote against the motion. I'm not an attorney. I don't know what the intent of Congress is. And although prominent congressional leaders are a strong indication, they're not congressional intent. I have no idea what congressional intent is. Those are things that are determined by courts with people that are a lot smarter in those things and in general than I am. So I agree with the last part of his motion. The council is unable to provide the court with a council review. I agree with that. But I find the motion itself to be entirely defective. And it's an important situation, and it has to be sorted out, and I think it needs to be sorted out in the courtroom. Right now, we want to control this and to keep it right into the little thing that we're talking about. But we just got this week a proposed interim rule that's pointed out for us, or a final interim rule that arose from a proposed interim rule that points out for us, I think very starkly, that we have a future problem arising with sectors. If we have overfished stocks that are capable of shutting down sectors, then sectors are a non-starter. We have to solve that problem. Is it solvable? Yeah, I'm sure it's solvable. It's not solvable this hour, and it's not solvable through the court action that we're talking about. But that's a discussion we have to have. We have to address that problem. We have to solve it. And we're not going to solve it by continuing with single-species management. I agree with David Daethel. Absolutely. I'm just as passionate about it as he is. I'm coming from the exact same place. We need to move toward ecosystem management, just as was in Apollonio and Dijkstra's book. And I find that book to be also very compelling. I agree with him completely on that. But this particular motion I cannot support because the motion itself is completely defective. Thank you.
Mark Gibson.
Yes, I agree with Dave Preble. This is a contorted and mixed motion. It seems to asking the council to say a lot of things. Probably could be improved upon, but I'd like to know from the maker of the motion what he thinks an adequate analysis would have been, and then I'd like to hear from the service what they think their homework assignment was.
Dr. Pierce, are you prepared to discuss what you think an adequate analysis would look like?
I can't say what an adequate analysis is. I just want an analysis so we can then judge whether or not it is adequate. We have no analysis before us. I understand the concern expressed about the motion. The way it is worded now, even though the council believes the mixed stock exception should apply, that should apply as a concept. That's what I had intended. Not necessarily in this particular instance, because we can't determine if it applies with Framework 42 because there's no analysis for us to look at. So I can see where the confusion would arise from the wording, but it was not my intent to indicate that an analysis had already been done that we could look at. It has not been done.
I guess, Mark, are you asking for a legal analysis, or are you saying an actual trade-off analysis?
No, the thrust of the motion seems to be that there's no analysis for us to look at. That's been stressed by the Commonwealth. Surely they must have a concept as to what should have been analyzed. And what is it, a mock-up of Framework 42 allowing overfishing on components of the stock and, MSY contributions from others? I mean, they must have something in mind, and I'd like to know whether the service agrees that that's what their homework assignment was from the judge.
Dr. Pierce?
I'll reference the National Standard Number 1 guidelines that we've lived with for so many years, the one that were published back in 1998, where we see the service make a very important statement and talks about what a fishery is, how a fishery is defined, and essentially says what you just said, David, and then goes on to say that from the SFA's, this is what the NIMP says. From the SFA's focus on fisheries and the fact that it did not amend National Standard Number 1, that is Congress, okay, NIMPS infers that Congress did not mean to eliminate entirely the longstanding practice of allowing a mixed stock fishery to continue if certain conditions specified in the guidelines were met. And then those conditions are identified, and I think those conditions are very easily met. However, of course, we have a new set of guidelines that we've already commented on formally that raised the bar, making it almost impossible for us to meet the criteria. Therein lies our dilemma. Now, the point that Paul made in his letter, I believe it was in his letter, that there's no reason for us to believe that this congressional intent has changed because, as indicated by the service back in 1998, all right, let's see here. Did the definition of fisheries change in the reauthorization of the Magnuson Act? No, it didn't change. Did National Standard Number 1 get amended? No, it didn't get amended. So those two critical elements of congressional intent as discerned by the service back in 1998 that led them to the development of the mixed stock exception, great idea. Great idea for us to use for flexibility. Don't necessarily have to use it, but it gives us the flexibility. And in this particular case, as applied to Framework 42, I would love to have known what the impact would have been on Framework 42 if that analysis had been done, just as I would love to know what the impact would be on the interim rule relative to the 2-to-1 day at sea counting area that is relatively huge in scope. No one's seen a figure. Rodney just showed me the figure, and it is rather dramatic in terms of where the 2-to-1 now applies. So take a look at that. I would love to know if the mixed dock exception applied to southern New England, mid-Atlantic winter flounder would enable us to do something different, not as devastating to some of the southeastern Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut ports, and I suppose maybe some mid-Atlantic too. It goes right down to the mid-Atlantic area, far, far greater. There's no minor change in the boundaries. It's a huge change in the boundaries. So those are the criteria. I want that analysis done relative to these criteria that are in the National Standard Number Guidelines, May 1, 1998.
Well, actually, Dave, that's helpful for me to hear that, because we're being asked to talk about something in the past, 1998 mixed dock exception guidelines, relative to a Framework 42 lawsuit that was filed 2 or 3 years ago. That's what the judge is asking us to respond to. So I think we should deal with what the judge asked us, and then we can go on and have a discussion about what are we going to do with the what I see as an intractable situation we find ourselves in with southern New England flounder. You know, and I did, with other members around the table, I met with Dr. Lubchenco a couple weeks ago, and the last point I made to her was that she better consider assembling a work group or a team to look at this southern New England blackback issue, and it should include members from this council, the Mid-Atlantic Council, Atlantic States, members of the federal and state government science centers, because we've got an F equals zero situation, and we've got many fisheries, recreational and commercial, that fish in the area that of that stock, of the boundaries of that stock. And while it's an issue right now for the interim rule, it becomes a much bigger issue. It blossoms, it mushrooms, whatever you want to call it. And that's what's concerned me about this whole discussion this time and the previous time, is I know people are looking at it as an opportunity to create a foothold to have a discussion about issues we're facing today and precedent that was set then and how it impacts the decision-making ability of today. But I think we should just dispense with the very narrow request from the court for us to weigh in on the addendum information. And then we need to figure out how to deal with this issue, the issues both Daves have brought up, and the issues that not just this council but the Mid-Atlantic and Atlantic States have to deal with as well. So I don't think that the mixed dock exception as currently written is going to help us out with the situations we're facing today. And I honestly believe it requires a much broader and unprecedented investigation into how to deal with the situations we have. This mixed dock exception, as written today, would be like trying to mow your lawn with a hammer. It doesn't work. We need something else. We need advice. We need latitude. We need flexibility. You know, we need a lot of things. But this isn't the way to get at that, in my opinion. Anyone else on the council? Sally.
Yeah, in the discussion that's happened, I think the biggest concern that I have is that the mixed stock exception is being misinterpreted as a weak stock exception or a depleted stock exception. And this is a huge misconception that I think is really misleading and misguiding the council, misguiding people who depend on the resource as far as what a solution might be. The mixed stock exception says that we may temporarily ignore a stock when overfishing is occurring, as long as the stock now under the current guidelines doesn't fall below the minimum stock size threshold more than half the time. It says nothing about ignoring a stock that's overfished, even for 1 year, and certainly not indefinitely. And I, you know, my question is, and it's been clarified a little bit, but what, you know, how would the maker of the motion and the seconder apply the mixed stock exception if we're, since we're in the process of turning back the clock a decade right now, turn it back a little bit more, and the status of haddock in the early 90s. Would we have thrown in the towel for a year on haddock because they were in such bad shape? Or, you know, what do you do about halibut? Do we just completely give up on that? You know, what about the place that yellowtail used to be in the fishery as a whole? It begs all of these questions, and I think it would be important, and I think this motion, which I'm going to oppose, but I think it would be a lot clearer if there was some more direction as far as which stocks the maker would intend to have the mixed stock exception apply to. I mean, we need to know that. I mean, we're talking about the 1998 rules, but as they would have been applied based on the 2004 stock assessments, and then management action is taken forward in Framework 42. So which species are those? I went back and reminded myself which species overfishing was occurring, but they weren't overfished. So in 2004, that was actually Gulf of Maine winter flounder, and that was the only species that fell into that particular category. But if we apply it now, then that's different. It's Gulf of Maine cod and southern New England windowpane that fall into the category of overfishing occurring, but they're not overfished. So, you know, I'd appreciate it if the maker of the motion could clarify which stocks would have the mixed stock exception applied in an analysis that would be carried out now.
David or David? Which David?
I don't have to offer up an opinion because it's irrelevant. My opinion doesn't matter in this regard. It's what the judge has ordered. We're responding to an order that the judge has issued. It's as simple as that.
Other David?
Well, I'll answer a little more specifically. I think we had some analysis from the Groundfish PDT prior to Framework 42 that showed we didn't meet the objectives of ending overfishing or making something move out of an overfished state 100% on every stock with different differential counting rates than we ultimately adopted. The ones we ultimately adopted were, at least on paper, designed to meet it for every single stock. If, for example, we had If you use that analysis, and I believe at the time, Tom can correct me, I'm sure he will, because I may be misinterpreting this, but I believe that we had some analysis that said we could have had differential counting at the rate of 1.4 to 1 in the Gulf of Maine if we didn't quite meet all our objectives for yellowtail flounder. And that's a huge difference between 1.4 and 2 to 1. If you had, you would have still had the restrictive trip limit on yellowtail, you would have still told people to, you know, not to target them, but you could have allowed people to catch more cod and more haddock, or at least fish more days. I'm not saying they would have gone and caught cod and haddock. They might have gone and caught dabs and gray sole and monkfish and lobsters, and who knows what they would have caught. I can't predict human behavior. But, you know, they would have had more opportunity. And, you know, we may not have come out any different stock-wise than we are right at the moment. A lot of the things we do have what I call the law of unintended consequences, where we say, okay, we're going to put in this very restrictive trip limit, and that influences human behavior. Or we're going to put in this very restrictive counting rate, and that influences human behavior. What did people do in the Gulf of Maine? I would say, by and large, they get as close as they could to a big stock of cod, and then they tried to minimize their time use by going out, getting 800 pounds, and going home. So that had an effect on cod. What would happen in southern New England now with a zero possession trip limit? And I'm sorry, we do have to have some discussion about the interim rule because it's the gorilla in the room that nobody seems to want to talk about. You got a zero possession limit of winter flounder. I thought we went there once with 30 pounds a day of cod. Do I keep the head or the tail? Now we're here zero. You don't even keep the head or the tail. Does anybody really think that's going to fix something? You know, you're going to shovel all these fish back dead? I hope we're not still at that point where we think that putting in zero possession means that people catch zero fish, because they don't. So You know, if I could employ a mixed stock exception here and say, okay, I'm going to put in a very restrictive trip limit on winter flounder that equals about the amount of winter flounder people catch when they catch and what else they're allowed to catch in southern New England, that would be how I would proceed. It would be to apply some common sense and logic to the fishery to say, if people catch 250 pounds of winter flounder while they catch 250 pounds of yellowtails and however many fluke they're allowed, then that should be the trip limit. Because that'll lead to less discards. It won't have any effect on rebuilding the fishery because those fish are all dead anyway when you throw them over. So that's the kind of thing that I want to use the mixed stock exception for. I want to have some ability to manage the fishery. The way this is, without that analysis having been done, we don't have any ability to manage the fishery. If the judge ultimately rules that the advice provided us by the National Marine Fisheries Service is the correct way to go, just have the Science Center come in every year and tell us which stock's in the worst shape, and we'll construct a management plan to that stock, and we can just let everything else do whatever it's going to do. So we'll be in here telling people they can fish, whatever it is because of windowpane flounder, ocean pout, halibut, I don't know, pick one. It could be virtually anything. And in return for that, we're going to put the ecosystem out of balance. We're going to put it into a situation where the very stock that you're trying to rebuild, you may never get there. It may be impossible to ever get there in the first place because all those other stocks have competed that particular fish out of the ability to rebuild. You can't have everything at maximum sustainable yield at the same time. I've been saying this for 30 years. We had the Science Center come in a few months ago. Mike Fogarty said the same thing. How much longer are we going to proceed on a path that leads to everybody's destruction?
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly agree with a lot that's been said here. I agree with the comments that Dave has been making. One of the reasons that I attempted to ask some questions to General Counsel concerning this was to try and get at what kind of results will happen with some court, a court decision on this. And either I interpreted it incorrectly or didn't understand what was said, but what I got out of that is that we are not going to get from the judge the answer that I think a number of us are looking for around this table. I think that he is going to make a decision that's relatively narrowly focused on Framework 42. So it just leaves me wondering. I agree with the chair that we need to spend some time, a working group or whatever, to get some decision on this, and we need to do it relatively quickly because, I mean, we're faced with situations where the longer we go in this rebuilding time period and the less number of years we have left, the more problems we are going to have with it. They're going to get worse and worse every single year, and we have to have a way to deal with it. But I don't think what comes out of the judge is going to resolve that. And quite frankly, I'd simply say, you know, in general, and this is no disparagement of the courts, the decisions that have come out of them are not ways to manage fish. If we think it's better for us to have the court manage the fish, let's dump the whole thing in its lap and let's go home. I think we've got a lot of work to get done on this, and I'm just not sure that this motion, or, you know, and I'm not picking on this motion, I have some concerns with the wording as well, but I don't think this motion does what all of us around here want to get done. Thank you.
Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as you know, the state of New Hampshire right now is in mourning for loss of one of our longtime colleagues, and I appreciate the time that you folks took this morning to spend a little time remembering John Nelson. I'm in the position that John Nelson was the person that was involved with beginning this lawsuit with the state of Massachusetts, and I've got to pick up the ball now. And I have felt from the beginning that this has been basically a difference of opinion between the service and our two states and about whether the mixed dock exception could be applied, could have been applied in Framework 42. We got answers from the service back in the development that no, it could not, and they continue to have that opinion, which is different from our viewpoint of Magnuson-Stevens Act and the mix, the National Standard Guideline, 1 guidelines. I believe that we do need to reiterate, I would hope the council would reiterate the message that they sent back to Judge Harrington back at our previous meeting on this, because as I see the addendum here, it's essentially a reiteration of NMSA's opinion, and I respect that, but I respectfully disagree. And so I'd like to have us send the same message back to Judge Harrington. I will admit to you, and this is for the makers of the motion, that there are some parts of this that I think could have been written a little bit better in sending this forward. So I would like to ask at this point if we could potentially have a recess here so that we might be able to discuss some potential modifications to this, if the maker of the motion and the seconder would agree to that, to see if we might be able to refine this, you know. And if you're not, then maybe what we could do is have the motion go forward, and depending on how it's voted on, then have a recess and consider.
All right, Terry on the list next.
Yeah, thanks. I'll be quick. I have no problem with taking a break to work through the wording of this motion. I'm very supportive of the concept of mixed dock exemption. Dave and Dave outlined most of the good reasons for it, but I'm struggling with the wording in this. And if we decide to take a break, would it be possible to go back to Mark's question to Pat about what she thought the homework assignment was? Because this first section of the motion, I'm really struggling with.
Okay, we'll take a break. Dr. Pierce, last word.
I was prepared to make a suggestion regarding how to make the wording more acceptable to more council members. I could do that now, or we could take a break. It's your call, Mr. Chairman.
Take a break. So I guess we have the amended language on the board. The maker and seconder agree?
Yes.
Any objection from the council to the amendments? So I don't have to go through a whole substitute process. Okay, David?
Yeah, after, you know, obviously listening to the reasonable arguments made around the table and during our break, this language is far better. It gets to the heart of the issue. And it brings us back to the conclusion that the service drew in its revised report, which is that the premise for the council's motion concerning congressional intent is incorrect, and there is no need or justification to change the analyses or conclusions contained in this revised report. So the first part of the motion is a reference to that. So the motion now reads that the council should disagree with the conclusions of the NIMS report dealing with the further consideration of the application of the mixed dock exception, and submitted to the council for review as ordered by Judge Edward J. Harrington, and inform Judge Harrington that NMSA has failed to perform the analysis for council review. Consequently, the council is unable to provide the court with a review.
One more time backwards, Dave. Sally?
I need an explanation of the difference. I'm sorry, I just don't, since I didn't write down the original, I need to understand better what the intent is in the changes that were made.
Dave, are you, or Sally was asking, what's the difference between the first motion and the amendments that you've made? What have you altered?
Well, I struck out the language that was after consequently, even though the council believes the MSC should apply as intended by Congress, without the court-ordered NIMS analyses. So that was all struck off.
Okay, so the first part of the motion is just a reiteration of what was said in February. Is that correct?
Well, no. Well, yes and no. I just read the specific conclusion that NIMS drew in their report, which is in the addendum that they added to the report.
Anyone else in the council? Mark Gibson.
Is the context for this motion solely a retrospective one, that is Framework 42 and the applicability of the mixed stock exception under the Magnuson of the day and the guidance of the day and the desired analysis, a retroactive one as well as to what that framework would have looked like had it been invoked at that time? Or does this have prospective meaning that it carries on to future management actions and pending actions?
To the maker.
All I can do is reference the judge's order, because he's calling the shots. And in his order, he says the council plays an integral role in passing and amending fisheries regulations. Therefore, prudent and thorough agency action leads the court to extend the suspension of Framework 42's 2-to-1 day at sea counting provisions, et cetera, et cetera. This extension allows the federal defendants to seriously consider and analyze the mixed stock exception as to Framework 42's 2-to-1 day at sea counting provisions, et cetera. So that's the wording of the judge.
Sally?
So it applies just to Framework 42. Nonetheless, it's precedent setting. And it still says that the council disagrees with National Marine Fisheries Service, their original report, and the addendum. So, you know, while it is directed to Framework 42, I don't think that, we should forget that it does have a precedent-setting nature.
David?
Yeah. And again, this is my interpretation of what I saw at the arguments that the judge conducted between the two parties, that he was quite narrowly focused on Framework 42, that the discussion of bringing in, the reauthorization and how things currently are didn't seem to be at issue for him. His issue was strictly, this is the law as it applied at this time, and that's what I'm ruling on. So, whatever anybody reads into this motion is purely conjecture. I mean, I assume he will be ruling on the law. Is it? That's why I used the copy of the Magnuson Act that I used. The updated one, I thought he found to be irrelevant. And all the discussion surrounding it, he found to be irrelevant. But that's just my take.
What else in the council? Okay, we've thrashed this pretty good. Anything further? Rodney?
May we have a roll call vote?
Gene?
Yeah, but not wanting to debate this issue because, or any of the comments that have been said, because that's, I don't think, appropriate given the context of this task before us. But one thing I did want to, for contextual purposes, explain is this concept that we didn't do an analysis, and just reiterate our view on that. We feel that an analysis of the applicability of the mixed stock exception as it specifically applies to 42 is whether it, as a threshold matter, is a legal concept that could be applied. And therefore, our analysis focused specifically on the species that were the subject of Framework 42 measures and that drove the measures in Framework 42. And we analyzed those in the context of what Amendment 13 required with respect to rebuilding. And our conclusion was not that the concept of mixed stock exception was not something that could have been considered in Framework 42. We fully acknowledge that it could have under the old guidelines. And in fact, we even said it could apply to overfished fisheries, but only with, if the caveat that it doesn't undermine rebuilding objectives of the fishery management plan. And so our analysis, and it was an analysis, looked specifically at whether those Amendment 13 objectives would be undermined if you applied, if you loosened any of the overfishing or any of the management measures that were being considered by Framework 42. And we concluded that it would undermine the rebuilding objectives of Amendment 13. And for that reason, in that particular context, with these particular species that are specified in our report, it did not pass the threshold question of whether the application of the exception would undermine rebuilding objectives.
So are you saying like a phasing in of a mortality reduction would be a form of a mixed stock exception application?
Right, and as you know, Amendment 13 did phase in, did allow overfishing on rebuilt stocks for up to 5 years, and we acknowledge this in our report. We were sued on this in litigation before Judge Huvel. Judge Huvel specifically found that it would be okay to phase out overfishing, which we did in Amendment 13, as long as it did not jeopardize rebuilding objectives. And so we were looking at those legal requirements in determining the applicability of the exception for the specific five stocks that were addressed in Framework 42.
Anything further from the council? Sorry, I'm not going to the audience. This is between the council and the court. Thank you. Anyone else on the council? Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I'm concerned about here, two things really. I never heard really an answer to Mark's question, and I'm not really clear in exactly what the wording of the judge's charge to NIMS was. And the other thing, I know that Dr. Pierce, I think, read it a minute ago, but I didn't get it all. And the other thing is, this isn't really a big thing, but I'd like to see further consideration of the application of the mixed stock exception to Framework 42. I think that should mention, it should be isolated to Framework 42, and that should be in there somewhere. That's just my sense of it. I don't feel strongly enough about it to carry it very far, but I just have the sense that it should be in there.
Anyone else on the council? Okay, roll call vote will be called.
Please answer yes, no, or abstain. Rodney Avila.
Yes.
Frank Blount.
No.
Rip Cunningham.
Abstain.
David Pierce.
Yes.
Jim Fair.
Yes.
David Gaethel.
Yes.
Mike Leary.
Yes.
Sally McGee.
No.
Pat Kirkel.
No.
Terry Stockwell.
Yes.
Doug Grout.
Yes.
Jimmy Odlin.
Yes.
Dave Preble.
Yes.
Dana Rice.
Yes.
Mark Alexander.
Yes.
Mark Gibson.
No.
And Mary Beth Tooley.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Sally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In light of the outcome of the vote, I wanted to inform you of my intent to submit dissenting views on this motion.
Okay, that's the purview of a council member. If they want to submit a dissenting opinion, you're free to do that. Rip, anything else under this agenda item?
No, that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We'll move on to the SSC report.